Welcome to the Newland Rock Leadership Effectiveness Podcast, hosted by me, Kate Thomas. This podcast is packed with practical tips and expert views to unlock the leadership effectiveness in you and your organization. My name is Kate Thomas, and I'm a leadership effectiveness expert and the founder of Newland Rock, a consultancy dedicated to focusing on increasing leadership effectiveness for talent-savvy companies and individuals. In this podcast, I will share my experience of supercharging leadership performance and business results with you. Join me and the best thought leaders for topical discussions and talent-centric insights. For this podcast episode, I'm joined by Shola Kay, an executive communication coach and international keynote speaker on inclusive leadership and empathy at work. Shola is passionate about helping organizations create an atmosphere of belonging and helping leaders communicate with power and clarity. Shola, it's absolutely fantastic to have you join me for this podcast. And I've been talking recently about saboteurs and what can get in our way from in terms of success. And when I heard you speak at an Albright event several months ago, you were talking about the executive presence, you were talking about presentation skills, and I thought, yes, 100%, there's something that gets in our way when we are going to present, and I'd love to talk about that in more detail. What are the saboteurs that are getting in our way? Before we get that, what's the backstory? How did you end up in this space?
Thanks for asking that, Kate. And my backstory revolves around being a really lousy communicator very early on in my career. And I started out working in management consulting in the USA, and I was very timid. I am an introvert, and I just found that in meetings, I was one of those people that never spoke up, and I would always volunteer to take notes just so that I at least was kept busy doing something or another during the meeting. And I was sort of this way for a couple of roles, I guess. And one role I got put on probation because they thought I was being lazy rather than it just being, I hated speaking and being heard in meetings. Another role I actually got fired after 6 months because again, wasn't speaking up enough, wasn't really making my value clear. So as a result of that, I ended up becoming a singer for a while. So I was doing lots of work on kind of big stages in the UK and overseas, and small stages too. And I just got very comfortable with being in front of audiences. So then I decided that I'd have another look at this communication thing, and did quite a bit of training and decided I loved it. And so now I work as a keynote speaker, as well as helping others who struggle a bit with their executive presence or communication in the workplace.
I love that, Shola, because, you know, you're coming from an authentic place, a place of you yourself not positioning yourself in a way of communicating and to that point, making yourself heard. So you know what it's like to have to do it, maybe.
Yeah, very much so. And whenever I share that in meetings, there'll always be someone that says, oh, gosh, yeah, I know exactly what it's like when you're sitting there and you're waiting for your moment to speak, and the moment never really comes because you've just got to create that moment. It's never kind of put in your lap. And then what tends to happen is if you don't speak up, you think, oh, next time. And then next time it's even worse because you've got this sort of pattern now of not speaking, and it can be really horrible. So I do know exactly what it feels like for people when they feel they're not representing themselves properly.
And I think not representing yourself properly, it's having confidence to speak up. But then I also find from the leaders that I work with that it's not just a confidence, it's also being clear on what it is that you want to be known for, what it is that you actually want to say. What do you find are common traps for leaders when they need to present, when they need to actually communicate, when they need to talk in a room? What tends to hold them back, do you find?
Well, I think there's a few things. I think it's not always that people don't speak up. So some people will speak, but they'll say too much. And then they're aware that they've just kind of blurbled for 5 minutes and everyone's looking at them like, what did you just say? So what I typically do when I work with individuals or groups that want to be better around this, it's very much about authenticity. So it's about, you know, what are your values as someone in the workplace and as a communicator? So do you want to come across as being someone who's, I don't know, strong and powerful and to the point? Or is it about being more relatable? Or, you know, there's a ton of different communication values that we can choose for ourselves. So I typically start with people identifying how they would like to come across. And I think once you sort of get who you want to be, how you would like to come across, then it's just about picking up those specific tools to achieve your goals, and it becomes a much simpler process. But I think it starts with knowing who you are and also what you'd like, what are your aspirations.
That's really interesting for me because, as you know from some of our earlier conversations, part of the work that I do is around assessing leaders for readiness. What I do find is that one of the biggest hurdles for leaders as they are transitioning and as they are moving up to the next level is around being clear on what it is that they want to be known for. You know, so when I'm assessing them, it's a lot about technical knowledge, but it's less in their story around who they are, what they value, and what they want to bring to the table. So I'm hearing that that becomes the starting block of forming your narrative, forming your identity.
Yeah, I think that's very much the case, because if you do want to differentiate yourself, it might be as simple as having a couple of stories from your past or from, you know, around what motivates you or what makes you tick in this particular role, and being able to tell those stories in whether it's, you know, 60 seconds, 30 seconds, 5 minutes if you're asked to do a longer presentation. But I think once you have that story, you've done that work to look back and understand, it's foundational for so many people, and they start realizing what it is to have that. It's not necessarily about charisma, but have that sort of story that goes before you. So when you're not in the room or when somebody's talking about you, they know what to say and they know what you stand for, and they back that up when you're present. And it makes an enormous difference. It just gives you a lot of strength as well.
When you think about leaders who aren't naturally, so even coming back to your backstory, they're not naturally wanting to talk. They're not naturally wanting to present. You know, there's plenty of people in the world who get a lot of energy from being that person and want to show up with the charisma, want to be the person standing at the top of the room and sharing what they know and bringing people with them. But when you don't, when that isn't in you, but you want to continue to take that next step in your career, so you know it's part of the role, what can a leader do to build the skills? You talk about setting a foundation. Are there particular techniques or structures that you find leaders can follow to really help them in this space?
Yeah, there's quite a few. And to be honest, I actually wrote a whole book of kind of these sort of short frameworks, so I haven't got it out there yet. So it's one of the things that's on my list of things to do. I think when we talk about communication, we all too often just think about public speaking and, you know, preparing an entire presentation. But quite often it's being able to cut through in a meeting or present your case in such a way that it's persuasive and also it's done with brevity. And I think that's where a lot of people can struggle. And especially if you're somebody who has technical knowledge and you just feel that like the logic and the data should carry me through, that's where you do need to be able to package things up better so that you've got a combination of great data, but also a sort of persuasive package that it sits within. So one little framework that I teach people, I think a lot of people have said this has really changed things for them, is called the PEEP framework. So it's P-E-E-P. And the initial P stands for point, and then each E stands for example, and then P stands for your final point. And it sounds super simple, but if you're, say, presenting a bit of data or you've got some other examples that you can share, you can wrap them up in this framework. And what it does is you'll say, well, Mike, I believe we should make decision X. There are three reasons why. And so as soon as you say there are three reasons why, you're basically signposting that you've got three reasons. Everyone, please be quiet until I've finished. And I'm super organized because I can you know, announce to you that I've got three bits coming up to support my case. So what that does is it just stops anyone who would typically be jumping in to interrupt you. And it also makes people think, wow, you're amazing. You're so organized. And you actually visibly see people just sort of flop back into their chairs, like, oh, I'm in safe hands here, just from that little framework. And there are so many other frameworks like that that you can use that help you stay on track. Because also while you're, once you've announced, I'm using this framework and I'm going to share these three points, while you're sharing point one, your brain is just busy ticking away saying, right, so point two, we should say point three. So even if you enter this sort of conversation or start speaking, I'm not sure if you've actually got three kind of good solid points. What typically happens, once you've used this a few times, your brain will do the work. And I've even spoken to barristers and people who, you know, it's their job to use words to defend others, you know, and it's a big deal. And they'll say, oh, yeah, you know, I was in court. I had two and a half. I used the framework, I had two and a half, but it was still fine. I didn't have three sort of good solid ones, but I came in with a sort of a lightweight one at the end. But it's just, it's that perception is everything. So if you come across as somebody who's well organized, know what you're saying, then that will count for a lot, and you'll be able to get away with a lot more, quite honestly.
Yeah, I think what I'm also hearing from that is that a lot of leaders that I talk to can have a lot that they want to say, because they're very interested in either the topic or they're invested in the outcome of a particular situation. There's a lot running through their mind. So it's creating that order, but also then having the impact that those sitting around you get a sense of clarity from having this structure.
Yeah, it's a great little framework. And it can often be just having a few of these sorts of tricks under your belt can make all the difference. And if you practice them on a regular basis, suddenly you become this person of influence rather than, you know, yet another person who's kind of not super organized and means well, but hasn't really got it all together.
Mm. What do you find, you know, when you say means well getting it all together, I hear you on that. And I think that a lot of the time, you know, we can get in our own way when it comes to how we show up when we're presenting, when we're talking, when we're in meetings. Those who need to perfect on their skills and how they present, what is getting in their way, do you think? What's come up?
Yeah, there's a few things. So of course, wanting to sort of having a sense of or a desire for perfection, shall we say. So people being perfectionists can get in the way. So what we might do is we might start and then we think, oh, no, actually, I should have said it this way, or, oh, I forgot to say this. So you end up interrupting yourself or looking like you're indecisive because you kind of switch tack. That can get in the way. I think also in our desire to get it right, what we can do is often just give people too much information. And that's when you see people sort of start switching off, or the eyes go a little bit kind of like, oh, yeah. Or you would get interrupted, because going back to what you were saying about making it clear for people, you tend to think, oh, the more information I give, the more persuasive I'll be. And that's not it at all. It's really not. So sometimes less is more, and three points powerfully made can be more successful than 10 points that aren't really sort of put together very well. So I think those are a couple of the reasons why we can trip ourselves up. I think if we can just relax a bit, practice these sorts of frameworks, not worrying about being perfect, but see that 50% of how we're taken is how we come across, and 50% might be the actual content. And take good care of pay a good attention to the how and not just the what that we're saying.
That's really important. I think that is such a strong way for anybody to come at their communication. 50% is content, and then 50% is in the how. In the how, in my mind, I've got ideas on what the how is. What are we really talking about in that 50%, that other 50%? What do we want leaders to be doing for that other 50%?
Well, some of this comes down to sort of one of the topics I love to talk about, which is empathy as well. And it's about understanding that not everyone's like you. So the way that you have to present your information, you may have to sort of not necessarily massage it, but just deliver it in such a way that it's effective and works for everybody. So, for example, if you're perhaps more of a sort of forceful person and you've got lots of very cerebral people in the room, just having loads of energy and kind of, well, right, we need to do this, that might be very ineffective for those cerebral people because they do not want to be pushed. They want to take time. They want to think things through. They've got that more kind of reasoned approach. So part of it in terms of the sort of persuasive element is really understanding different ways to position your content, which is again the how, position your content and also how you come across, so that people are not put off by you and your passion, let's say, or by you and your kind of thoughtfulness, but you kind of manage to sort of tick a few boxes in terms of the way you come across and the way that you deliver that information.
Nice. It's knowing the audience. It's understanding the perspectives of the variety of people that are going to be sitting there and acknowledging that what you want might not be the same as what everybody else in the room wants.
Absolutely. And persuasion is really giving people the thing that you want to give them in the way that they want to receive it, basically. Mm. So it's just having that awareness. And I'm coaching somebody now, doing some executive coaching, and this is somebody who is quite a forceful person and is sort of very much around, right, why are we taking so long to think this through? We need to move quickly. And what they really needed is an understanding of different personality types, of how you can acknowledge what somebody else has shared to soften them up before you then say, well, I think that's a great idea. And what about if we just added X, Y, and Z to it to make it even more, you know, even make it even better or even whatever. And that's going to be much more effective for many people than, yeah, not bad, but I think we should do it this way instead. So it's just it's small things that just basically sort of add a bit of oil or lubricant to the meeting, to the process, so that things are achieved in a sort of more stress-free way, and also it's more effective for you.
I'm hearing the tweaks. There's tweaks. It's certainly skills, and it's tweaking our natural style. We want to still remain authentic. We want to show up in terms of who we are. We also want to be respectful to others in the room. And there's self-management in what you just talked about for me. Self-management in making sure that others are heard, or you acknowledging and ensuring that others feel heard, and not getting overly aroused by all the things that you want to say and what you think is the right way to do it. Self-managing to calm it down.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because even if you've got an awareness of where they're coming from, but you can't regulate yourself or manage yourself, then that awareness isn't going to take you very far. So you've got to be able to apply, you know, some changes or some directions to yourself, and respond quickly to that in the moment, so that you can change up your style or change up what you're sharing.
I know you've been very busy for International Women's Day, and spending time at different organisations talking about the rise of females in the workplace. Let me just ask, you know, do you find there are differences in how female leaders and male leaders work on their executive presence, work on their communication skills?
One of the areas that I tend to work on with female leaders, and it's not across the board, sometimes it's more around being finding strategies to speak up and be more assertive, but also it's about combining that with warmth, because all too often, if we have assertive females, there've been so many studies that sort of that say that both men and women don't like women who are too assertive. So it's, how do you, if you are somebody who's quite forceful and powerful and wants to make things happen, how do you sort of modify that with a bit of extra warmth so that you can still do that without ticking people off? You know, and it, rightly or wrongly, it's just the world that we're in at the moment. Sometimes it's also around, I think for men they can be more used to holding court because people interrupt them less, but then them having the understanding that they can still massage what they're saying into being something that's more concise and to the point. And then also sometimes with women, it's around they might be seen as quite assertive. And as I say, it's about having a style that acknowledges others while they still get their point across, so that they come across as being kind of warm and generous, but still get to say what they want to say, basically.
It's really interesting, isn't it, when you sort of peel back the different sort of behaviours that sit across across the genders, and then also how, you know, I find it remarkable when we think about, we want females to be assertive, we want them to take on leadership roles, but we also need to hear it in a way that makes us feel comfortable. And that warmth, that generosity, and I think companionship or connection is also really sits there for both male and female when we get to leadership. How are we connecting with everybody around us? Comes back to your point about empathy there as well, I think, Shola.
Yeah, I agree. And I have a keynote that I deliver, which is called The Modern Leader for the Future Ready Workplace. And at the end of that, I say, well, why would anyone follow you? If you lost your sort of leadership, your title, your role, whatever, tomorrow, why would somebody still follow you? What is the essence of who you are, how you lead, what your values are, and how do you get those across to people? And it's often something people haven't really thought about. And I think it's so important, because if we want to be these sort of transformational leader, which is what, you know, the sort of trend today to in leadership style versus command and control, then you've really got to be thinking, okay, what do I bring to the table in that respect? How do I encourage and motivate people around me? Am I a leader coach? You know, there's so many questions to ask of oneself if you want to be more transformational. So yeah, it is something that I think all leaders should be thinking about if they haven't already.
I absolutely love that question that you just brought into this conversation. You know, why would anyone follow you? I think that is such a strong question. And I'd actually encourage every leader who's listening to us on our podcast today to reflect on that. Because I think it really brings up a lot of even what you talked about at the start and the importance of us having our values, having our story, knowing what it is that we stand for. Such a strong one. Thank you. I've got one last question for you, and this is more of just any tips, because our virtual world isn't going anywhere, or at least I don't think so. It's not going anywhere anytime soon. And in fact, I was talking to a business partner only last night who was talking about how we're really advancing even further than he thought we would on how we create second, third level virtual environments that are far more immersive in how we're working. So if this virtual world is here to stay, what's important in how we are communicating and how we're showing up virtually?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think we've got to make extra effort to have those one-to-one conversations. I think we can't mediate everything through meetings, because obviously we do lose quite a bit of the communication in a meeting, and we don't get some of the same cues that we used to. I think that virtual is brilliant, because I think people who are quieter, who are perhaps who would be reluctant to sort of chip in during a big meeting, all they've got to do now is put something in the chat. So I think it's a huge enabler for many. But I also say that I think people need to kind of play their hand a bit more in terms of reaching out to make connections with individuals, saying, oh, you know, let's jump on a call, let's jump on a Zoom one-to-one to have a quick chat. They've got to sort of supplement the time that they spend in those bigger meetings with that one-to-one, that one-to-one conversation, to learn more about individuals, to be more persuasive and so on and so forth. So I think that's the one of the big things that's so important.
And I think for me, when I've observed leaders in virtual settings, or anybody really, leader or not, you know, we're all contributing to the work that an organization does, there's still an opportunity for body language in a virtual setting to aid our communication. And I encourage leaders to, you know, lean in, think about their environment and what's sitting around them and how that actually shows up for their own identity. Use their tone. to reflect how they're feeling. You're the expert. How would that sit with you on some of those tips that I am also adding?
Yeah, I think they're good points. And it's interesting because when we all went virtual, whatever it was, a couple of years ago now, goodness, I remember running a few sessions around, okay, how do you take your communication to the virtual environment, and saying things like, well, you know, what sort of backdrop do you have? You could even put make something that's branded for you, or, you know, be very purposeful about that. Even things like, what sort of quality microphone have you got so people can hear you properly? You know, how are you coming across? Are you making sure that you're nodding profusely so people can see, you know, if you agree, all those sorts of things. So it's funny because in my world, because most of the people I work with have sort of gone virtual and have done it quite effectively, I kind of feel as though, well, I said that sort of 18 months ago, they should know now. But there are still many people out there who need those basic tips and hints, or they've got the basics in place and now it's time to get to, you know, 2.0 with the virtual communication and sort of up it a little bit more.
Yeah, our expectations are starting to shift even more, aren't they? As you say, we're 2 years into this now. So what does the virtual comms world look like, 2.0? What else can we be doing? Are we sat in have we got a bit too comfortable? And can we raise our game a little bit more in terms of how we're presenting ourselves virtually? I think it's useful for leaders to just stop for a minute and test themselves as to how engaged they are in their virtual communication with their businesses. It's not going anywhere, that's for sure.
No, certainly not. And that's a great thing because it means, you know, we could do less travel. I think it gives us more free time in many ways. So, I'm celebrating virtual communication, I have to say. I love
it. Absolutely. Yeah, likewise. Shola, is there anything that I have not asked you or we have not talked about that you think would be important to flag, given the objective is to help leaders understand what can get in their way? What are the saboteurs that are pulling them back from ultimate success in their work? And in this conversation, the executive presence, the communication, how we're showing up, how we're bringing people with them.
I think it's always important to have that the humility to ask people around you, because you will know, or they will know really, how you're perceived. So if you've got two or three trusted people, and you say to them, well, look, you know, I'm speaking in so-and-so meeting next week, I'd love you to just chat to me afterwards on these X, Y, and Z areas, because I'd love to know how I come across. And I think if you've got people that you can sort of call on or rely on to give you that sort of feedback, I think that's very helpful. And I think a lot of leaders are not necessarily afraid of feedback, but don't actively seek it out. But it could be one or two little things. Maybe you say a lot, or maybe you interrupt yourself or interrupt other people. Just there could be some very small things that can make a huge difference to how you're perceived. So I definitely think just get as much information as you can from trusted sources to help you move forward.
I think that's fantastic. Great advice. And I agree that that phrase, it's lonely at the top, doesn't come from It isn't new, but it's an important one. And the further we get to those senior level decision making roles, the less sometimes we ask for feedback and rely on others. So thank you very much for reminding us and bringing that into one of our tips. It's been an absolute pleasure. I think you've given us so much. Anybody listening to this has definitely got several things that they can walk away with and start to practice.
Thank you, Kate. It was lovely to be here. Really great to chat. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Newland Rock Leadership Effectiveness Podcast with me, your host, Kate Thomas. If you would like more information on how I can help you or your organization maximize your talent and leadership effectiveness strategies, then reach out to me through my website, newlandrock.com.